My first child by him, daughter, what I saw with her was she would not let me change her diapers. I just could not pry her legs apart, and she was afraid of her father, and he would take them in the bedroom and lock the door, and they would scream it. I would have to break the door down and physically fight him. And the court-appointed psychiatrist that had been doing evaluations for 12 years for this judge said that I was a suitable parent and the doctor was a sexually deviant schizoid.
Well, he refused to listen to what the or at least abide by what the psychiatrist had to say, and I assume then he gave permanent custody to your husband?
He gave permanent custody of two. This psychiatrist also gave testimony that this man, meaning the doctor, was incapable of having relationships with females because of his childlike nature, and this judge gives two little baby girls to this man. I went to court. My children were prepared now. They're 10 years old. They can verbalize. They were prepared to talk to this judge. I showed them, showed the judge pictures of them black and blue, and the judge says, well, I'm just a country judge. I don't interview children.
Same judge.
Same judge sent those kids back. So now my kids are alone with a stepmother addict who's taking them around to bars, sleeping with known dealers in front of my children. The judge refused to sign an order saying that I could take my children home with me, even though their father's whereabouts were unknown.
Devin Weber tells her personal story of tragedy and triumph right now on Alternative Views. This edition of Alternative Views is going to be very disturbing, but it might be, in the final run, uplifting as well. It's a very complex story of Devin Weber, who's gone through hell for many years. It's a story that includes sexual molestation of children, incest, police corruption, political corruption, corruption of the medical community, abuse by power structure in a small town. But it's also an uplifting story about how a woman can go through terrible tragedy in her life and come out okay. Devin, you've told your story on several of the top talk shows in the country, on television and all, but we want to let you... You were with other people at the time, and your time was hacked up by commercials and all this. We want you to just tell your own story now about how you found out that your husband was sexually abusing your children and then what happened as a result of all this. When did you find out? When did it appear to you that he was sexually abusing your children?
Well, I really started seeing it for sure when I had my second little baby. So my first child by him, daughter, what I saw with her was she would not let me change her diapers.
How old was she?
She was, well, this was ever since she was like 3 months old, and
one
time she was a year old, I had had another baby. I just could not pry her legs apart, and she was afraid of her father, and he kept saying that I was an overprotective mother, but And he kept sending me to psychiatrists saying that I was crazy. So I started sharing this with the psychiatrist. And by the time I had my second little girl, and she just, I mean, I couldn't, you couldn't pry a little baby, three-month-old baby's legs apart. I started realizing that something was wrong. And he would take them in the bedroom and lock the door, and they would scream it. I would have to break the door down and physically fight him. So I was starting to see it, and the psychiatrist was helping me see it right about the time that the divorce and custody case started. I was just starting to be able to see it.
And guess what the profession of her husband was? A very prominent medical doctor in a small town in Ohio near Dayton.
Actually, he was an MD and also a specialist, so he had had additional training to become a family practice specialist.
Well, how long did this... Now, they were so young. How long did you live with him knowing this?
Well, I had only lived with him... my little girl was almost 2 years old when I lost her in the custody case, so just from like 1 to 2, I'd had two children very closely together.
Now, there was a matter of a drug problem in the family, too. What was that?
Well, I had realized I had come from a poor background and had always worked, but had been on ADC, but was always a working mother, and I'd had a previous child that came into this marriage, and it was very quickly into the marriage that I realized this doctor was on drugs, and he was on Valium, and he was on large amounts of antidepressants, and he was on Ritalin for a high, and then he would take downers, and he was a pot smoker chronically. And so we used to have a lot of arguments about that, but the problem with that was one of the things that how he manipulated me would be to find medical problems in me. And he had diagnosed that he had heard a clicking in my jaw, so he had sent me to a colleague of his who started to treat the jaw and gave me a severe jaw problem where I had to go to the hospital and have traction. But I was in pain, so this is how my husband introduced me to drugs. So he had me on codeine, and he had me on large amounts of Valium. And he would tell me that Valium was a non-addicting drug, and I could take 50 or 60, 10 milligrams, and it wouldn't bother me. Well, right about that time, I was starting to need that much Valium to live with this person. And what he did was he got me addicted. And I didn't know anything about addictions because I'd never been on drugs. And then he gave me the key to the drug unit at his facility. So I was sneaking there getting drugs before I even realized I was an addict. Then he cut my supply off, and I had a grand mal seizure. And I was in critical condition in an intensive care unit. I almost died before I found out that Valium is a highly addictive drug. I guess he was trying to kill me.
Well, at what point then did you file for divorce?
Well, then right when that happened, I came home from the hospital, and the doctors that were in practice with him called me up, and they said they knew why I had a seizure. It was because of him. And they said that they were going to have a meeting with him saying that he had psychiatric problems. They were seeing it in his practice, and they wanted to move me out for a few days just to make sure the children and I were safe while they confronted him with, if he didn't get help, they'd have to get rid of him. But what happened is the schizoid that he is doesn't respond to, you know, rational behavior modification. He got very irrational and angry and sued me for a divorce 2 days after I got out of the hospital, saying that I was crazy from my recent seizure. And the problem was, when his colleagues knew they couldn't manage him, they protected him. So all the support that I thought I had, they all betrayed me and lied and protected him, because anybody know they had a sexually deviant weirdo in their private practice.
So you went before a judge then for a divorce hearing. Now, what
right.
was that like?
Well, I went into this, it was just so bizarre. It was 5 minutes long, and I went in, and this was the first time I met this judge, and he just told me that he wanted me out of my home by the end of the evening, and he put my children in foster homes. All three of them, the little babies, my one was a year and my other was two, and my son was about eight at the time, for no reason. And his reason said was that my husband was a doctor and he needed the telephone. So after 5 minutes, I lost my children, my home, every belonging, and I was completely homeless.
Well, they said that you were an unfit mother because the doctor, this upstanding gentleman in the community, said you were crazy. And
well,
so
you know, the bizarre thing is they never gave me a reason. They never gave a reason other than they just wanted this thing to settle down a little bit. They never gave a reason, and I, just a year ago, was looking through testimony and the clerk of courts trying to think, well, maybe there was so much happening, I forgot the reason. And all it states in the documents is that the judge ordered these children in a foster home. Hmm. It doesn't give a reason.
And the 5 minutes, that wasn't a real complete divorce hearing, was it?
Or no, it was like a preliminary hearing before the trial, which was about a year later. That was 8.5 hours long.
Okay, well, he kicked you out of your house. Mm-hmm. Did he give you any separate maintenance or alimony or something?
Well, they gave me, they said I could have $50 a week, but you have to understand, I had no job. I was a housewife. I have no supportive family, so I didn't really know a lot of people in this community, and the attorney that I had representing me told me that if I wanted my children, I had to leave that city. I had to get out of town. And I was just, I said, I don't want to leave the city. My children are here. He said, if I wanted custody, I had to leave town. I bought into it because my husband, the doctor, said if I ever tried to leave him, he would take the kids. And so that was a fear that I had, so I was a victim. I did anything this attorney had said, and he, at the time, was the prosecutor of that town, of that city, my private attorney.
Oh, he had both jobs. Sometimes there's collusion among lawyers in a case this. Was there in your case,
I found that out 8 months into it after my attorney, the prosecutor, was abusing me. I was trying to tell him, this man is sexually abusing my kids, and this prosecutor would use profanity with me, saying, who was I having sex with to make it nice? And he would say, you better come up with money for me or I'm going to quit you and you're going to lose your kids. This guy would talk to me, and I didn't even have a home. I would be in a phone booth saying, please help my children. I'm telling you, he is abusing my kids.
And he was the prosecutor, but he wouldn't even look into it.
No, he wouldn't. Hmm.
Did you have any counseling yourself to help you over this?
Well, I stayed with the psychiatrist that I was going to at the time all this happened, and I tried to tell him that, you know, I think that my attorney is in on this because he's being cruel to me and he's not doing anything to protect me and he's told me to get out of town and I don't understand this. And I told him about the 5 minute hearing, and my psychiatrist didn't believe me. So when he didn't believe me, and you know your children are being abused and you're homeless, I mean, I had to live with like slime outlaws. I had to live there. I had no experience to be with criminal type people. I was living in a rural community. I was a doctor's wife. You know, and now I'm homeless. And this psychiatrist kept saying, well, you know, this just doesn't happen. You're just, you know, our system is going to take care of you. Yeah. So I got very sick. I started having some psychotic type symptoms, because if when no one hears you and then your own doctor says it isn't happening, you start thinking, well, maybe it isn't happening. And so I would go to see the children in the foster home, and by then the doctor was giving the foster parent all free medical.
Your husband, your husband, the doctor.
Yeah, my husband, the doctor, was taking care of the foster parent, giving her all free medical care, giving her all free drugs. So I knew what was happening there.
Was she treating the children all right?
She was treating my girls all right, but she wasn't treating my son, because I now know this. The doctor was trying to say that it was my son that was sexually abusing the kids to cover, and so she was being mean to him.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, you had a second divorce hearing. I mean, the divorce hearing proper.
Right.
What happened?
And custody. That was 8.5 hours long.
How much longer after the first 5 minutes?
It was a good 10 months. So
ten
see,
months.
I had a long time to regress. And I had to adjust to a lifestyle. I had no money. I had to learn how to live with people that rob houses. you know, I had to learn to live.
That was the only place where you could find a stay.
I didn't know anybody. You know, I didn't know anybody. So I went with this woman and I cleaned her house for her, for a room, but I kept getting sicker. And when you're living with somebody that's sick, you know, I couldn't take care of myself. So she threw me out, and I was just drifting, and I went into this, like, nightclub bar thing, and some woman said I could live with her. And when you start getting sick, you start losing your perception of things. You can't think things through when you're desperate. So I had to adjust to learning how to live with street hardcore people that have no values, that have no morals, plus fight a custody case. Mm-hmm. So I had to get another attorney, a well-known attorney, and I found him because the gal I was living with, he got her off from murder. This is the kind of people I was living with. So I go to this guy. I have no money. He helps me see that my other attorney has been in on it, because we could pick up that he was feeding the doctor's attorney all the information.
About you?
About me,
oh,
yes.
Oh, boy. Now, what happened, what did the judge do? The same judge, right?
Yeah.
And what did he do during this, on the second hearing?
Well, that was 8.5 hours long, and I had to subpoena about half of that town that I was living in, because they had given testimony of things that were negative about me, because, you know, my doctor husband had me followed. He had wiretapped my telephone. He put little babies up to the phone, having them cry. And when you know your children are being tortured and you hear a baby crying on the phone, you get sick. I mean, you just get really sick. So, but I kept pulling myself together. I graduated from school. I got a job. So I was halfway stable by the time my trial came up, and I was living in a low-income housing project. So the judge appointed a court-appointed psychiatrist to examine both of us. And the court-appointed psychiatrist that had been doing evaluations for 12 years for this judge said that I was a suitable parent and the doctor was a sexually deviant schizoid.
My goodness, so he believed your story.
Well, he believed it because he tested me out. You know, I mean, they do these psychiatric 4-hour evaluations of both of us, and I mean, it surprised me, because I would have been the first to tell you I was crazy at that point, because I felt crazy, but yeah. He said it was because of him. It was because of what this man was doing to me, and that I felt that desperateness because no one would help me. I mean, Children's Services wouldn't help me in that community. I went to them. They said they can't go against a doctor or the judge. So when your options run out, you start wearing that. But in the trial, not one negative thing came out about me, and the judge tried to keep the psychiatrist evaluation out by refusing to accept his deposition. So I had to subpoena this psychiatrist in from a city that was about 3 hours away from where this county was, and pay for all the time that he missed just to get his testimony in. And then the judge locked it up, so there's not public record to these evaluations.
Oh, my gosh. So he refused to listen to what or at least abide by what the psychiatrist had to say, and I assume then he gave permanent custody to your husband?
He gave permanent custody of two. This psychiatrist also gave testimony that this man, meaning the doctor, was incapable of having relationships with females because of his childlike nature. And this judge gives two little baby girls to this man. I did get my son, but that's because I had my son from a previous marriage.
What kind of treatment did he... So he had custody of the children. Was he remarried by this time?
Oh, yeah, he had already... These type of people, they have patterns. I mean, they have absolute patterns. And he was already engaged by the custody trial time and got married. And since then, there's been a drama with that marriage and the children. But already he had another woman to present. Here's this healthy wife I have now. And I not only lost my children, that this guy didn't take me back into court and try to take all my legal rights away from me so that I could never see my kids again.
And did the abuse continue when he was, after he got remarried?
With the children or with me?
With the children.
He kept abusing me. Well, these type of people are so out of control that initially he gained some control by having another woman that would care for the children.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a deviant person, so his abuse became more covert. But he was abusing the children, because I would go to pick up my kids, and the only way they had to communicate with me at that age was like banging their head.
Yeah. And so there wasn't any way they could really let you know. What about
this? Because they couldn't talk. They were just babies, you know. So that, I'll never forget that.
What about your son? Did he see anything that he could tell you about?
Well, he was able to talk years later, and he would say that when I wasn't there, this doctor would call him a homosexual, and he would beat him and things like that. But I never saw that when I was living there, because, you know, you're so afraid of this man. I mean, you are so afraid of him. And then through the years, my children now, they start getting older. So they go from 2 years old to now they're 8 and 10, and I went back into court because my little girl was at my house for a visit, and she was changing her clothes, and her whole body was black and blue. And the stepmother had beat her and thrown her down some steps, so I kept her. I didn't return her, and I got another attorney. And he asked for an ex parte order, which I received. And the cleaning woman that the stepmother and doctor had called me, saying that they're on drugs, there's guns going off, get these children out of here. And so I did. And so the judge signed an ex parte order. I went to court. My children were prepared now. They're 10 years old. They can verbalize. They were prepared to talk to this judge. I showed the judge pictures of them black and blue, and the judge says, well, I'm just a country judge. I don't interview children.
Same judge.
Sent those kids back.
Can you
imagine their faces when they finally tell the truth, and then they're sent back?
Was there continuing sexual abuse by the father?
The children would act out things like that. After he got them, before he had another woman living in there with him, when I would have them on visits, they went from how they would never spread their legs to when I changed their diapers, they would take their legs and throw it back over their head and hold their vaginas apart.
Oh, my God.
So I knew that he was doing something to these kids. And I called 800 numbers, and what they'll tell you is go to your local, you have to go to the children's service number. I mean, I tried all that stuff that people say to do, and meantime, I'm getting very sick trying to deal with this. And so I had to take a break just to get healthy again, and I ended up going from low-income housing home homeless, and I knew that the only way to save the kids is I had to become reputable. I had to have credibility, and that's what I did. I started a business, became a speaker. I got some national success. And then 2 years ago, I went public with it myself to get my children back at ages 11 and 12.
Now, at what point did you suspect more dope activity and narcotic activity within the family of the doctor and the stepmother?
Well, I suspected it because of the things that the children were saying. And children learn to own this than to be helpless. So the children, he controlled them. Like, he would put them in a room after they'd come home from me and play music and force them to sing the song that he wanted them to sing at his funeral if they choose to live with their mom. Mm-hmm. So my kids, they stopped talking, but every once in a while they'd bring a little friend down. The little friend would say, Alicia, did you tell your mommy about finding Betsy dead? And I said, what? Alicia said, well, mommy, I got up to go to school and Betsy was dead on the floor, and Daddy had to give her mouth to mouth, and we had to call the ambulance. She overdosed.
What was he giving them?
She was given, this was the stepmother. She was taking all the drugs. Now he's turned her into an addict, like he tried to do with me. And the kids, so I tried to get the children out of there. This judge, I got another attorney. The judge refused to sign an ex parte order. I found out that the doctor had been shipped to a drug treatment center. So now my kids are alone with a stepmother addict who's taking them around bars, sleeping with known dealers in front of my children. The judge refused to sign an order saying that I could take my children home with me, even though their father's whereabouts were unknown, using the remark that I've had to deal with Devin Weber for years, and I'm sick of it.
Well, how is it that your husband was sent off for drug treatment? Apparently it was his drug activity was found out.
Well, the hospital that he was working at, there was missing drugs, large amount of missing drugs. Now, you have to understand, this doctor went from like a 6'3", well-built person down to about 100 pounds. He looked like a corpse walking. And no one at this hospital confronted this man. I know this because I went and confronted the hospital people myself. But what happened after this missing drugs, they connected it with this doctor and shipped him away to clean him up and to keep the story quiet. Meantime, what I had to do, because the judge wouldn't give me the children, I had to go in and file with the sheriff's department, you know, a criminal suit saying that I believe there's illegal drugs going on in the house. That brought in a detective who found out that there was drug trafficking and busted both the doctor and his wife. Because, see, I had to play a hunch. If I thought, my thinking was, I'll never get custody of these kids, I gave up on that. This judge isn't going to give them to me. But if I could get them on a criminal charge and they had to go to prison, how could this judge not give me my kids then? But it turned out that this detective, who is the hero, interviewed the children for 3.5 hours, heard horror stories.
Like what?
Stories like the doctor was doing pelvics on him. He would give them shots and say that if they cried, he'd take the needle and break it off in their arms. He took their cat and tried to kill it in front of it by stuffing it in a sweeper. He threw firecrackers at them in the house. They showed bullet holes in the walls where he was stoned and shooting his gun off and just missed where my daughter was coming out of the bathroom. They took an Uzi machine gun out of this house. And this judge, he knew all of this stuff.
Did they find drugs in the house?
They found the wife was busted while trafficking. She was caught right doing it. There was no question about it. Now, the real problem comes in. Now we got the doctor busted and the wife busted, and it goes to a prosecutor's office. And this is a different prosecutor now. I wasn't familiar with this guy. He refuses to indict them. This thing sat there for a year, and the detectives kept on it and on it, and the prosecutor refused to indict the doctor, and nobody could figure out why. He said it wasn't conflict of interest, and that's how I got involved. I had to go talk to this prosecutor and say, why aren't you prosecuting? And then I had to do my own investigative work, and I had to bring TV cameras in from the city that I lived in to try to expose these people. And this guy still would not prosecute this drug trafficking doctor. He shipped the case to another county. That county refused to prosecute, shipped it back to Dark County. Dark County shipped it back to Shelby County. So it really looked like they were protecting the doctor. I mean, that's what it looked like. And so I found in the Ohio Revised Code, it's 30905, and it's a code, and it says, as a taxpaying citizen, if you feel a prosecutor is in gross neglect of duty, this code will enable you to file suit, which I did. So I went public and filed charges as a citizen against this prosecutor, and I pulled court records, and I found over 40 criminal cases that got, including aggravated attempted murder and drug trafficking and child molesting, that these These outlaws walked completely free because this prosecutor refused to prosecute within time, stature, and no other reason.
And the judge didn't look into it?
The judge signed all of the case dismisses. The same judge signed all these case dismisses. See, after indictment, a prosecutor has 250 days to take that to trial. If he doesn't do it within that time frame, they walk free, no matter how hideous the crime is. So I have frustrated cops starting to call me their hero because I'm exposing all of this. My life was indirectly threatened, the detective on my case. I had to do stakeouts and watch the house to get the mother subpoenaed. I had to do all of this to get my kids out of that environment, which I did. I got them with no thanks to this judge. My children are with me. They've been determined victims of crime by the Ohio Supreme Court. It's an automatic, mandatory thing that the court sends the prosecutor a report of this decision. Prosecutor still does not indict this doctor. Now,
your ex-husband.
Yeah, the ex-husband. I didn't understand this.
You know, this sounds so much like either movies or novels or short stories you read about small towns where the local power structure is so tight with each other, including the legal system, the corporate system, the whole judicial system, and the media, where they just protect each other and they don't let anything mess that up. Mm-hmm. And of course the doctors are considered prominent members of the local power structure, the judges, and then the prosecutors and the sheriffs or whatever, you know, they do the bidding of these people.
Well,
is that the feel that you get?
Even a step further, it's not just like the good old boys club. In this particular case, I knew that what I experienced in that courtroom wasn't just a bad deal, it was evil. And since I've been investigating street buzzes, the judge does cocaine, the first attorney that I told you I had that was a prosecutor just got kicked out of the Elks Club for profanity.
That stuff, can you imagine?
Yeah, so
being
what,
too bad for the Elks Club? Yeah,
yeah, really. But the point that I'm making is that these players within this judicial system are inadequate, deviant personalities, not just scratching each other's backs. Who knows what the covert dealings are?
Mm-hmm.
Because any judge that would give little babies to a known pedophile. Which brings up an interesting point. When I did all my own investigating and I hit the papers, people would write me their stories. And I interviewed a former detective who told me that years ago at a high school, there was a teacher by the same last name as this judge who was accused of molesting one of his students. The community was outraged because there was a cover-up, because this teacher, who has the same last name as this judge, his mother was in a political position, and they got it off. And people were even trying to get 60 Minutes to come in and expose these people because there was a molested child. Well, I found out through the detective that this judge was teaching at this high school during that time before he became an attorney. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. That's the missing link. We know that they're protecting him. The best that I was able to accomplish was I went to the hospital director and said, you know, this guy comes in here 90 pounds. You never confront the doctor. Didn't you want to know if he had a terminal illness even? He's been practicing medicine. They called me up. The president of the board of directors of this hospital called me up and said, what would it take from that hospital to get me to shut up? I said, you know, mister, you insult my integrity, because if you have one practicing pedophile, I will speak out not just for my children, but any child with any nearness to that hospital. Next thing I know, they buy the doctor's medical community center out and throw them out of town. Of course, they write headlines, this hospital, doctor leaving to help the community, they're going to buy the practice. Well, the funny thing is his practice sat empty for over 10 years before he took it. they never bought it then. It's just cover-up. It's cover-up after cover-up.
I mean, the doctor, your ex-husband, moved out of town?
Well, he was thrown out of town.
Well, did they, and he can still practice? Did they remove his license to practice?
Because we could not get an indictment on this guy, a detective from the Ohio Pharmaceutical Board on a federal level came all the way down to Dirk County and walked in the clerk of courts to personally thank me for my work, because he said without me they wouldn't even have gotten this far. So we forced this other county that Dirk County sent it to force a plea bargain. So 7 criminal felonies by the doctor was plea bargained down to like 3 criminal misdemeanors. And all we got was his license to prescribe medicine taken away. Then his 3 criminal misdemeanors went through this same judge, who, of course, which we knew, would give him treatment in lieu of conviction. He dropped the trafficking charges on the wife and sentenced her to like a month in jail, and gave her job duty where she could, all she had to do was sleep in jail. The judge let her out from like 10 in the morning till 10 at night for her job, and she wasn't even working anywhere. I couldn't get press up there. Just recently, the prosecutor that I went after, he had to hire the best attorney in Ohio to go after little me. I mean, I didn't know anything about being an attorney, but I scared the heck out of this prosecutor. Of course, he got my case dismissed, but just within the last 3 weeks, I found out that he has been shipped off to a treatment center.
For drug abuse?
Yeah, drug alcohol.
So they were all doing it.
Yeah, so I go up to the little town newspaper. Have you heard anything about the prosecutor? And he goes, the reporter there, he goes, you mean that he's been shipped off to a treatment center in Wisconsin? And I said, yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Are you going to print it? And he says, well, no, why would I? It's not local news. The treatment center's in another state. That's how, by the way, I ended up here. Thank you to you. I can share it because, again, I was frustrated. Here this is going on. No one wants to hear this. And it's still going on. I mean, 3 days before I came down here, it's still going on. It's still going on. Years, for 10 years, this has been happening. It's unbelievable.
Well, you have your little girls now, and they're, what, teenagers now? How old are they?
They're 14 and 15.
And how have they come through all this?
They
must be disturbed.
Well, yeah, they're disturbed. Yeah.
In what way? How does this show up?
Well, just like when they were maybe 10 or 11 and living with him, my daughter had a birthday party, slumber party, with 20 little girls, and the doctor pulls his penis out in front of 20 little girls. So every year now, for the 2 years that I have my daughter on her birthday, see, children will block all this. She's depressed, helpless, hopeless. I have to get her to doctors. She feels like there's things going on wrong with her body, and it's him. A mother called me that was their babysitter, said that he pulled out his penis in front of her daughter. And so I said, will you talk? Will you talk? And she said, yes. So I send my detective over there, and guess what? She says, well, I'm afraid because he's a doctor. So, I mean, the guy's a pedophile. He's a pedophile.
Do either of your children date boys yet?
Not yet.
They're getting that puberty.
We go to my husband that I'm married to. We go to family therapy. We go to all these therapies. You know, my children are there. They get massage therapy. Victims of crime have been very good and helped me pay for the compensation of some of this. That my children had to have their jaws. Treatment for their jaws because of holding in anger. They had to have temporal mandibular joint syndrome, so they had severe pain. My husband and I've gotten them off of all drugs. When they'd come to our house, he'd have codeine and everything packed. He treated the kids chronically, and then he would say that, you know, I was making them sick. Well, he was making them sick, because my kids are hardly sick now. We've done major work on that, but the horror is I only have temporary custody.
Still?
Yeah, because I have to go to that judge. See, to get custody, I have to go where the case was in that county. And so what if this judge says, well, he's had treatment? So all the expense and everything has been on me. I don't take him to court for even child support because I'd have to go through this judge.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I only have temporary custody.
So you still could lose your children back to this?
I still could lose my children if I had to go through that that court system, yes.
Well, how have you survived all this? Tell us the story of you now.
Well, I guess it took when I was homeless and drifting and a little crazy. I was so broken and so stripped. I was so sick that just to brush my teeth took so much energy. My gums bled. I was raped. I was exposed to things that I never knew existed. But there was this voice inside of me that said, if I do survive this, I don't want to be bitter because I've not done anything wrong here and this could ruin me. And I was able to go in and take responsibility that I chose this evil man. And that is something about me. And I was able to connect with my own childhood sexual abuse and torture when I was an infant. But see, I had blocked it because...
You were abused by your own father.
My father, yes. And so I took responsibility for my pain and became healthier. And in fact, I even went back and paid the $90 to sit in front of that psychiatrist just to tell him that I was right and that his telling me this didn't happen. I became a very sick person. And he said, I know that now, and he does a lot better work for other patients. But
when did you find out, at what point did you become aware that you had been abused by your father, or were you always aware of it?
I really wasn't aware to the extent of torture. I wasn't aware, and that I was so young. I had some memory of violent, very violent sexual abuse. My father, when I was six, had me out in a cottage in the woods, and I was very afraid of the dark, and he made me sleep down in the living room by a window, and he went upstairs. So the only way he could get past me was to come down the stairs. About an hour later, there was this monster banging at the window and at the door, and it broke the door in, and this monster viciously was strangling me. And I screamed and was about to lose consciousness, and this monster took off his mask, and it was my father. He had a nylon stocking on his face, and he said, you know, Mama's little baby, so it was Daddy, can I sleep with you? I mean, this was my life, so it made sense that I would choose an evil, sexually molesting person because I was working that through, which I own that, and my own healing, I have helped hundreds of thousands of people across the country by sharing what I found out about myself, but I had to see that I hated myself, and that's why I was a victim. You know, now I'm on the sex offenders committee at courthouses. I train cops and prosecutors and social workers. I train therapists how to teach them to work with survivors and perpetrators. You know, I have a purpose, so I mean, that's the light at the end of this horrible dark tunnel. But it's, people have no idea that in this universe that there's deviance in these power positions. These are people that come from these dysfunctional sexually abusive families. They run our country, and people don't know this, and it's the most horrifying reality. Just that reality alone, if I'd come from a normal, healthy family, would have wiped me out, because you believe that good are protected, and that is not true. That is not true, and I urge people to, if they know in their hearts that they're innocent, never, never give up.
How would you advise a family, a parent, what signs would they look for if there was sexual abuse in their children?
Well, the younger the child, you'll see a lot of withdrawal or severe acting out. If you see little kids fondling themselves for long periods or sticking things in one another, I saw these behaviors with my children. Little children do not know how to do these kinds of sexual behaviors.
Little at what age?
Any age. I do training so that I can work with infants that have been molested. An infant that has been molested will tell you They'll have post-traumatic stress. If they were molested in a crib, they'll scream. This was my children. If at 3 months old, if they heard his car pulled up, they screamed. They know. But we're not trained to listen. We're not trained to listen to the children. But children that have not gone through puberty yet do not sexually act out extensively. So if you have a child that's masturbating a lot and they're little, because these little kids will do exactly what they're taught. A three-year-old can be taught to sexually perform if they're molested over and over and over. That's what my daughter was doing when I changed her diapers. When she spread, she was taught to do that. And those are signs. Those are signs. And children, when they can't talk, will tell you through behaviors, and you have to listen. Children that can talk, even with all this education, children will not tell because they are shamed. They are shamed. The perpetrator, all of his defenses that enable him to do that, sift right into the openness of this wounded, open, innocent child, and they wear every ounce of shame that the perpetrator should experience. And kids won't tell. They won't tell. My kids right now, they'll jump up and down and tell you that he never did one thing to them. They'll lie, they'll protect them because they're not ready to deal with the shame. That's the part that hurts, to see that they're going to be victims probably their entire life because of this. Their entire life they will have, because sexual abuse doesn't just affect you in the bedroom. It affects you at work. It affects you in relationships. It affects you in every aspect of your life, everywhere.
Are there special places where people can get therapy for this? I've noticed here in Austin, for instance, there are organizations that have therapy sessions for children who are victims of incest.
Well, the sad reality is very few professional people have been trained to work with the sexually abused. So what I highly encourage is that you know who your child's working with. You know that they specialize in this area, that they're trained in this area. It's just now coming out, the sexual abuse, and it's a completely different kind of abuse. It's unlike any other to heal from. It's the most devastating, traumatic abuse there is. For me, a part of my becoming psychotic was working through the child in me that became psychotic to hide the abuse. So I had to create these dramas in my life where I had the star role in the horror flick just to strip me down of my defenses that I could feel, because I was armor. It took homeless. It took losing my kids. So think of these little children that are molested as little ones. One out of three females are molested before they're 18 years old. And that's just from the reported cases. One out of five males. I just worked with a man. A nurse in the hospital molested him when he was a child. It's everywhere. It's unbelievable. And our system is in denial. They don't want to see this. And to see it, they have to see their own. So you really want to make sure you know who the people are with your children. Right before I came here, a case broke out in Dayton, a teacher in a Catholic school, which scared me because I send my children to private schools, was molesting the kids. This happened right as I'm sitting here. This just broke in Dayton, Ohio.
Well, usually we hear about men molesting little girls and little boys. Do women do this?
Women do it as well.
They really
yes,
do.
They do. Yes, they
Must
do.
Be to much a lesser extent, isn't it?
Not really.
Really?
Depends on, see, the tragedy is that 99% of a sexual deviant perpetrator tells you that this person has been done themselves. So they're acting out their own sexual abuse by identifying with their perpetrator instead of being a victim. So they feel the kid deserves it, because they don't want to look at the pain in the child, because they'd have to see their own sexual abuse. So you have perpetrators that are in denial. They have no idea that they were ever sexually abused. So it could be a teacher. It could be the coach. It could be the doctor that you go to. It could be the first psychiatrist that my doctor husband sent me to. He started hitting on me when I was 8 months pregnant. using everything that I ever told him about my history. When I said, what, I wouldn't want to be with you. This guy was the president of the Psychiatric Association in that state. I mean, it happens all the time.
You mentioned a while ago that children wouldn't, if they are sticking things in each other or exploring. What about the children who quote, play doctor, unquote, just among themselves, not with adults? Is this considered?
It is. If they're playing doctor to the extent that they're really probing, at it depends on the age of that child, they have been taught that. Bedwetting with little girls is a sign of sexual abuse. Bedwetting. Frequent urine infections, vaginitis in children. When I got my child, she had infections, vaginitis. The doctor that tried to do a pelvic, my daughter panicked so bad that they said that they'd have to put her to sleep. Infections are a sign of it. Children will have frequent infections, nightmares. They will have nightmares. As a child, myself as a child, I had blisters all over my eyes trying to block out that abuse. When I was a little girl, like 3, I would get in a corner and scream bloody murder, don't get near me. Little 3-year-olds don't behave this way.
To your father?
To my grandmother told me this. My grandmother is the only person that ever validated me. That, of course, she didn't know my dad was doing that, but she knew something was wrong with me.
Do you think that your girls will be able to break that cycle, which seems to repeat itself over and over?
Yeah, I am going to hope for that. I'm not going to ever give up hope on that. I think if they're treated, I make sure that my children, even when they have physical complaints, I work with their doctors to make sure that their medical doctors know how to work with a sexually abused child to rule out what is somatic from the incest and what is really needing to be treated, because they do not believe they're normal. So I've been blessed because you don't get near my child unless I know your history, you know, unless I know you're healthy. So, and that's how I pull from hope, and their doctors have been wonderful. Because my children panic in medical treatment because he abused them medically. He'd be stoned and he'd give them shots, and God only knows what he did to them. One time he took my daughter's picture and put it on a post and made her stand there while he took a gun and shot her picture and said, this is what I really want to do to you. Now, how's a kid supposed to deal with this? They throw up, they bang their heads on walls because they're not able to verbalize this. But my doctor was, the professionals are working with them and they're becoming much more relaxed, and the doctor gave her a physical because my little girl didn't think she was normal. And he said her name and he says, you look like a healthy, and then when he got to normal, he goes, normal, 14-year-old girl to me. And she jumped off. She says, Mommy, my doctor says I'm normal. And everybody was hugging her. I mean, she really had that fear. My husband helps me with them, and we've been working with these kids for years with their headaches and their somatic complaints and switching them from drugs to, you know, herbal vitamins and things like that. So we've been working with them for a long time. Problem is, this was chronic for 10 years. They had to live with this.
Yeah.
So I've only had them for 2. Plus, I get them right when they're going through puberty. So I have 2
extra problems.
Yeah, extra problems with that.
How do they relate to your new husband?
They really, really like him. They went through a period when they... See, when you get an abused child, love doesn't just take care of that abuse. The safety of love allows them to act out. That's the dynamic that occurs.
Oh,
because they're not able to act out their fear and rage. So first they acted out their rage towards me. Then they started getting very paranoid, like, would my husband come in their room? And they still have to have, even in the summer, they can't have windows open and blinds open. They think their dad's looking in at them. My little girl said that, well, he didn't get me because I used to hold the shower doors tight. You know, that kind of stuff. But now I say that we're a pretty healthy, dysfunctional family. I mean, you know, we get help because it's hard to see your own child's abuse, when that child's attacking you, I mean, you can only take so much and you get angry. So he comes to family therapy with me, and they can talk to him, and they get their little backs tickled and rubbed. They beat me out of all of that, but, you know, I don't get in on that anymore. But, you know, he's been really, but see, he's had to live with me all these years of me being in and out of court. This doctor would refuse to let me see my children, saying that my boxer dog was giving them strep throat.
Oh, my God.
Just ridiculous. And I couldn't take it to court because of the judge.
Have you discussed your sexual abuse as a child with your children?
They know just briefly. When they go into shame issues, I'm able to say that I understand how that. I'll say things like, I know my dad did really bad things to me, but I don't tell them what. My children don't know that I was homeless and raped. I can't tell. You can't tell your children. When my daughter was, I guess she was five, she told my son, and he came down and told me that she said a little boy, she let a little boy at school the F word her, and she was five. And so I went to her and I said, what did you tell, you know, your brother? And she said, I told him that little Johnny at school, I let him, and she said the F word. And I said back to her, do you know what that means? And she proceeded to tell me. So I had to be like a therapist and work with her, saying, well, honey, you know, it's better if you have little friends, but, you know, that's your private part. You don't have to let them touch you. And then when she's not in the room, I would just go crazy. But you can't show your kids that because you got to keep it separate. Healthy people don't work their stuff out. Now, what they'll see is a mom when I'm out fighting crime and being Batwoman. They'll see me be grouchy. They'll see me, you know, be wiped out. And, you know, one day, if they want to know, I'll tell them. But I validate them. But for that reason, I can't be their healer. You know, I'm taking somewhere else.
You do a lot of speaking and counseling and all now. Right. How would somebody get in contact with you if they wanted to do so?
Well, they could, write me or call me.
You have a phone number and address,
yes,
which you can give us?
Can I give it now?
Sure.
It'll be area code 513-461-7720.
And what about your address?
And that would be 332 Jones Street.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Dayton, Ohio, 45410.
Well, thank you for being
thank
with
you
us.
Thank you for having
and,
me, Frank. I appreciate it.
I'm sorry it was painful to recall and relive all these things, but maybe it'll help somebody else too.
I hope so.
Okay.
Thank you.
And that's the end of another Alternative Views. We'd like to thank our crew, our director Brian Lynch, our camera people Lisa Henderson and Susan Ginsberg, and our audio man was Jack Hopper. Alternative Views is a presentation of the Alternative Information Network, P.O. Box 7279, Austin, Texas, 78713. If you'd like to write to us, that's our address. Goodbye.